us in the everyday, me and you. The Good News and Shoes.
This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good News and Shoes.
Thank you for joining The Healthy Way. I am Dr. Roy Spicer, biochemist and water quality specialist with Clean Water Revival in Stuart, Florida. With my co-host, Kim Jones, pharmacist with Prescription and Wellness Shop of Stuart, Florida. Welcome to The Healthy Way. This is Dr. Roy Spicer. My background includes being a bacteriologist for the New Jersey Department of Health, a biochemist for Ortho Research Foundation. I've achieved a level 5 certification as a water quality specialist and practiced chiropractic for 30 years in Long Island, New York. Currently, I am vice president of Clean Water Revival located in Stuart, Florida. I'm here today with my co-host, Kim Jones.
Good afternoon. I'm Kim Jones. I am a Florida licensed pharmacist. I've been practicing here on the Treasure Coast for almost 20 years. I am a native of Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and I received my Bachelor of Science in Pharmacy from Midwestern University in Illinois. Currently, I am the owner of the Prescription Shop and Wellness Center of Stuart, where my staff and I are committed to caring for members of the community like they are family.
Today, we have a very special guest, Jenny Kramer, an eating disorder specialist. Jenny J. Kramer is the founder and executive director of Metro Behavioral Health Associates Eating Disorder Centers located in Scarsdale, New York and New York City. MBHA offers comprehensive outpatient treatment for all forms of eating disorders, addictions, and mood disorders, including individualized intensive outpatient programs for adolescents and adults. Jenny serves as chairperson for the board of directors of the Binge Eating Disorders Association. Jenny served as a director of the Renfro Centers for Eating Disorders for 5 years and has been treating all forms of eating disorders for over a dozen years. Jenny lectures and has been interviewed in the media extensively and has co-authored Overcoming Binge Eating for Dummies for the popular series and is soon releasing her new book, Food, Money, Time, and Love. Welcome to our show, Jenny.
Thank you so much. Hi, Roy. Hi, Kim. Nice to be here.
Well, we're so excited to hear what you have to say. There's so many people that have eating disorders, and you know, I'd like to start out by asking you, how do you differentiate binge eating from emotional eating versus compulsive overeating?
Fabulous first question. I think the term binge eating is pretty overused. I think people use it pretty flippantly. There's probably no one among us who hasn't experienced what we'll call emotional eating. You know, it's episodic in nature. It's usually in response to something that's making you feel something or in anticipation of something, and it's sort of it's a one-off. Compulsive overeating is a little different. It has components of that, except that it's really sort of all day. It's sort of grazing, and neither is in response to hunger cues. It's pretty much emotionally driven. Binge eating specifically has components of those two things, but it is a much, much greater volume of food in a sitting. It's mostly done in secret with great shame. It has a lot of health and financial impact, as you can imagine, and it's usually often, you know, alone, and not always, but often at night. And it has a lot more health sequelae than, you know, just emotional eating or compulsive overeating, or although all three can certainly be, you know, impactful.
Well, one of the things, I wouldn't say I've done binge eating, but Thanksgiving being, as you well know, my wife is Italian, she made a feast and a half. I would say overeating was the thing, and we're getting into the holidays again, and I think I have 3 or 4 Christmas parties coming up. So what would you recommend to protect myself from overeating or moderate what I'm doing? Is there a secret for?
No. if not that, then okay. I would say that the first thing is where you have your headset. So I'm going to say something controversial, but since when would I do anything else? There really is no such thing as a bad food, and I know people don't always agree with that. has to do with context. If you or anyone else goes to a family holiday, any setting at all, and there are some lovely and special things there, the first thing to do is have them. Because if you don't have them, you're going to wind up feeling deprived and have something else a lot less special later. The key is to know that it's not the last time in the world you're going to have those things, that you can eat them slowly and mindfully and taste them and actually experience them rather than foraging them like, okay, this is the only time of year I get to have this. See, it's all about sort of a diet mentality. If we say that there are good foods and bad foods, and this is the day I'm going to have bad foods, and tomorrow I'm going to eat nothing, I mean, who hasn't done that? Except that it throws your body into a tizzy, it creates emotional havoc. So the idea is to really taste everything. And, you know, unless you have, you know, anaphylactic allergies, you should really taste everything. And know that unless you're, unfortunately, in a situation where you don't know where your next meal is coming from, which is also possible, that there'll be opportunities to have it again, that there's no mystery behind any specific food. I mean, this is such a volatile time of year for folks because they really think, you know, like, oh, my God, I have to be careful. I'm going to do damage over the holidays. What does damage mean? If you're eating mindfully and slowly and tasting everything and enjoying it and hopefully enjoying the setting in which you're having it, that's not damage. If you're shoveling because you think this is the only day you get to do that, well, then you're going to do some damage.
Well, is there a way to strategically plan what you're going to eat? So if I see the entire menu going from appetizers to the dessert, which is cannolis, can I pick what I want and try to figure out a caloric total intake, or is that kind of being too obsessive?
You can, and a lot of people do that. Unfortunately, in the long haul, it's not successful, and here's why. The goal, and I know this seems like I'm speaking, you know, in tongue, but the goal is intuitive eating. The goal is for you to be able to tell when you're hungry and when you're eating because you want to address the hunger cue, and also when you're eating because you're not necessarily as hungry, but there's something lovely and wonderful. If you plan your day, you're not allowing for intuitive eating because you're telling your body when you're going to be hungry. Now, on the other hand, you can also prepare in a different way, which is to simply make a deal with yourself, which is, I'm going to eat moderately. I'm going to eat mindfully. I'm going to take my time. And I'm going to taste as many things as I wish. And I don't have to have, you know, enough portions for people. I can actually taste and have everything and pay attention to when I'm full. You know, I mean, it's really about trying to get back to intuitive eating. Now, you might say, well, how do you do intuitive eating? How do we even know how? Well, guess what? We all already knew how. And how I know that is that we were all toddlers. If you ever watch a toddler, they know exactly when they're hungry. They know exactly what they want. They know when they don't want any more. We get in the way of that. We think they haven't had enough and they should have more diversity and are you sure you had enough and please have some more and make sure you taste that. Actually, they know exactly what they want. We all did at one point. So it's interesting to think about the things that interfere with that. So, yes, of course, you can be mindful and careful and planful, but you also want to be able to eat in a very intuitive way, in a way that addresses your natural hunger cues.
Well, just one of the things, years ago I had a patient and she had an eating disorder. I don't know exactly what the components were, but she came in and said she went to a support group and she said people are so obsessive compulsive. She knew exactly how long it took to melt a pint of Haagen-Dazs in a microwave to the point where it would just be soft enough to eat the whole pint. Now, is that an emotional problem or is it compulsive or is it upset? I mean, there's so many emotional components to eating disorders.
Yeah, take your pick. I mean, it depends on context. To me, everything is context-driven. If someone loves and enjoys food, loves to prepare, loves to cook, and knows how long things take to cook and melt, that's a lovely thing. If someone, on the other hand, has made food the entire focus of their lives to the exclusion of social activity, of being productive in a way they would like to be, if it's become the whole of their existence in a way that hides them from the rest of the world, that creates social isolation, not so much. So, you know, you have to sort of search your own soul and know, is food an interest or is it an obsession? And am I obsessed with the idea of eating? Well, okay, if I am, is it that I'm obsessed with the idea that I think I'm going to go hungry one day? Or am I obsessed with the idea that there'll never be enough? How do I know that? I mean, there's a whole line of thinking that we take people through to sort of counter the impulses.
Well, just I'd like to get your general opinion about all these diets. We interviewed Ann Louise Gilderman recently. Radical Metabolism was a new book. There's so many concocted diets out there. I mean, there's hundreds. And I don't think any of them really work. You go back to the original caloric counting, you have Weight Watchers, all these programs. I mean, I don't think they address any of the emotional issues, obviously, but people are always trying to lose weight. Is that an emotional problem in itself, trying to lose weight because you're overweight?
Well, let me put it this way. First of all, let me say that I love Ann Louise Gittleman. I think she's done some marvelous work. And, you know, her focus is more about sort of detoxifying. And I think there's something that's very reasonable about that. I will say, however, in general, we are all severe victims of diet culture. There's a long list, as long as my arm, of all the things that contribute to fluctuations in body size, fluctuations in lab values. And you know what the number one is on every list? Being on a diet. A diet is the one thing that will guarantee that your weight will not be at its natural set point, because it is not natural to diet. And yet, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar business. And it's a very, very hard thing to make the point to most people that diets actually hurt you. You know, it reminds me of how bariatric surgery has become, you know, part of our culture as well. Promises get made. The diet industry makes promises that this will be the key, this will be the thing, this is what's going to put you in control, this is what's going to make you like yourself and your body and your relationship to food. Here's surgery. Here's what we promise for that. That's what's going to make you thin. It's going to make you happy, because being thin is happy. That's the presumption. And therefore, you know, this will do the job. All of it is a lie. And we buy it hook, line, and sinker, because it addresses some inner need, as if body size is going to determine our happiness, when that's not true. So I think diets are extremely rampant and equally as dangerous.
Excellent information. Kim had a question.
Jenny, there's a lot of talk about body shaming, especially in the media and with young girls today. How do we as a society correct this?
Wow, got an hour and a half?
I know.
That's a fabulous question. I mean, think about what's at the heart of the matter. Why is anyone body shamed? Because somehow it's been promoted that there's an aesthetic that says thin is healthy, thin is better, thin is the way to go. If you are not that, then therefore there's something wrong with you. And by the way, if I shame you, then there's no attention on me. The attention is all on you. It's sort of, to me, the same as bullying. Fat shaming or body shaming is bullying. And make no mistake, they are the same. So it's promoted in the media. Dare I say there are public figures among us now who also promote shaming. And so we have to be very, very mindful of what are the societal messages. You know, schools play a very big role in this. They have to really be educating not only their students but their staff about body acceptance, about the fact that this is just the sort of, you know, earth bag that we walk around in, and yes, we want it to be in good shape, and yes, we want it to help us live a long life, but it's not the essence of who we are. It's not the soul of who we are. It's not, you know, the mark we make in the world. You know, we're all going to live as long as we live. And I promise you, on our epitaphs, it's not going to say, you know, she lived a great life and, by the way, had a great body. It's not about that. It's about what contribution do we make for having been here however long we're here. So it's a very large systemic issue. It's media. It's schools. It's social media for sure. And it's really the messages that we promote. And there's lots of organizations now that are trying very hard to get this message out.
Well, we're speaking today with Jenny Kramer, author of Binge Eating for Dummies. Jenny, how can our listeners reach you if they want more information?
Well, we have a couple of ways. Thanks for asking. Our website is MBHANY, that's M like Mary, B boy, H Harry, A apple, NY.com, and we have a lot of great resources there. Certainly, if they want to give us a call, it's 914-723-MBHA. And for your listeners who are, you know, down south, and I'm a little jealous, but I know it's a little cool there today, we actually do a lot of remote work also, so you don't necessarily have to be in the New York area, and we can certainly point you in the direction of resources in your area as well.
Could you just repeat the phone number again on the website?
Sure. It's 914-723-MBHA or 6242. And our website is mbhany.com.
Well, one of the things that I'm interested in, and I'm sure you've heard about it, are how environmental toxins like estrogenic substances found in plastics, GMOs in food, according to eaters, cause eating disorders. Well, I know that there are a new chemical name called obesogens. We've been studying this for a while. Whether it's the xenoestrogens, these are chemicals that can alter the metabolism of the body. They're estrogenic-like, or we're seeing a lot of thyroid problems now resulting from fluoridation and other chemicals in the environment. So when you have a physiological problem, whether it's a thyroid issue or some other issue because of obesogens in your diet, how does that affect the outcomes of what you're trying to help people with? Do they have to clean up their diets?
Yeah, brilliant question, because first of all, you know, I want to take a moment to acknowledge you, Roy, because I know the work that you do, and it's just extraordinary. You're really at the cutting edge of all of this, and you're right, all of these things have an impact, and so it leads me to say that the only way to really address all of this is really with what I call a team approach. You have to address medical, the psychological, and the nutritional. And within the psychological realm, there are subcategories. You know, does this have a family component? Most often it does. Does this have a neurobiological component? You know, let's not forget that depression and anxiety are the two largest, what we call comorbidities or co-occurring illnesses that lead to some form of a distorted relationship with food or any addiction for that matter. And so a proper workup is necessary. There are rare times when medication can also be of great importance, and of course to be aware of your environment. You know, I'm not just saying this because I believe in what you do, but it's true that when you're doing a full evaluation of yourself, it's very important to know the environment you live in and what you're exposed to, so that you can see what may be dysregulating you in any number of ways.
Well, I've spoken with a lot of different doctors, and there's a lot of different theories out there as far as your genetics, background affecting metabolism. I spoke with one doctor, I did a questionnaire, and she said I was a 50-50 carbohydrate and protein metabolizer. Some people metabolize proteins better, carbohydrates not as well. I'm getting older now, and my growth hormone is lower, so I guess my carbohydrates are converting to fat more. I mean, those are secondary issues to what you're dealing with, but when you deal with a dynamic of all these issues and your approach, how are you unique? Is there any uniqueness to how you treat people versus the way other doctors or centers treat people that you get better results with?
I would like to think that what I'm about to say is something that other people do too. But the first step is really about compassion and honesty and being kind and not shaming people and not wagging your finger and telling them what they must do, but collaborating with them and making sure that they are motivated and that they understand and that they're going to understand the moments that there's going to be this great gap between what they know and what they do. And our job is to get them from what they know over to what they do so that it's the same. And I do think the team approach is just a critical piece. Now, you know, in certain geographical areas, you have your choice of well-trained physicians and nutritionists and psychotherapists and groups and the like. There are other geographical areas where that may not be available. And so there are other services available, like, for instance, Overeat is Anonymous. But I say that with great qualification, because a 12-step program, you know, is life-saving for some people who are addicted to substances like alcohol and drugs. When it comes to food, though, consider that you don't want to go to an OA meeting that is too restrictive, and some of them can be. You have to sort of feel it out. But you can get group support, and sometimes it's just enough to know that you're not the only one that's going through this, and that relieves a whole level of stress. So I guess the answer I'm really looking for is that it's that we take this very no-stones-unturned approach. We're looking at the neurobiological, the hormonal, the physical, the emotional, the nutritional, the environmental, the whole picture as best we can.
Well, obviously it is an epidemic of obesity in the United States. You know, I've been reading studies that some of the foods that people eat are actually addictive agents in there, like certain chemicals they put in these snack foods. Are you aware of any of the specifics, chemicals or anything they put in snack foods or other foods that can become make someone addictive to that food?
Oh, sure. I mean, the only industry that's second to the diet industry, you know, is certainly an industry that wants to sell more food. So there are a lot of things that go into foods that are going to sort of turn off our normal brain chemistry and our normal responses to food. But again, I maintain that even in the face of chemically treated foods, which hopefully we would stay away from and try to go more towards naturally occurring and organic foods when we can, even in the face of that, it is also about mindset. And when I say mindset, I don't mean mind control. I don't mean willpower. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about having the compassion and the self-compassion to say, okay, I'm a human being. This is how I'm wired. I'm supposed to have fuel. I'm supposed to have food. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to try everything I can to not look to that to solve problems that have nothing to do with hunger and fuel. Well, and if I see that I am doing that, then I need to get some support.
One thing I'm really concerned about is sugar in everything. And I became aware of this a while back when I started looking at the sugar levels in all the foods, even yogurts, the so-called coconut, everything has sugar in it. And it's very hard. Is that a big factor in addiction, that all the foods contain sugar, everything contains sugar? Is that one of the components?
You've put your finger on the most controversial subject in our field right now, because if you look at a functional MRI of the brain during a hit of cocaine, a hit of some other drug, an alcohol binge, even a food binge, or even, you know, in the case of bulimia, like a food purge, if you look at them, they look identical, right? So you could say, well, clearly all these things have the same effect on the brain. Now, when you have someone eating sugar, it can look that way also, but sugar in its most naturally occurring forms and in proper modified amounts are necessary. Our bodies need sugar to do certain things. You mentioned, you know, what does the food industry do? Well, the food industry adds sugar to things that didn't have sugar to start with, and that's when it gets dangerous. There are foods that have sugar because that's what they're made of. A banana has sugar in it. You're not going to take the sugar. There's no such thing as a low-sugar banana, and, you know, other fruits like that. But on the other hand, I mean, unless you're diabetic, of course, you have to be watchful of foods that have had sugar added for no apparent reason other than to make you want more. So I don't think sugar is the enemy. I think it's how it's used and the amounts that it's used in.
Well, Kim had a question.
Sure.
Jenny, what can our listeners do today if they suspect either they or a family member have an eating disorder?
Well, the first thing is that if it's for a family member, do not, and I repeat this loudly and clearly, do not comment on what they're eating. Even if you're afraid for them, even if you love them, even if you care about them, don't comment on what they're eating, because that's actually not the issue. The issue is, why is it being done? And so, you know, you want to help them figure out for themselves if they're ready to just take a look to see if they have a relationship with food that's hurting them. Notice how I worded that. You know, are you willing to take a look to see if you have a relationship with food that might be hurting you? If your family member's not ready, then the variable is age, right? If you're the mother of a 14-year-old and she's lost 30 pounds in a month, guess what? She doesn't get to vote. You're going to have to really take her immediately to your pediatrician, see what's happened, you know, see if there's any medical issues. When it's in the case of an adult, you really want to just make sure that they understand that you love them and that you care about them, that this isn't about body size necessarily. This is about that you're concerned that they may be abusing their relationship to food. If you yourself think that you're suffering, the first and foremost thing that I would say is to let any shame go. There is no shame to be felt here. You know, you're human. That's all you are, is human. And the first, again, depending on where you live and what you have access to me, the first step is always to see if you can find a psychotherapist that either has eating disorders as a specialty or certainly is very good at treating anxiety and depression, and someone who is skills-based. You know,
well, Jenny, I don't want to cut you off, but we're running out of time. We have a few seconds left. Could you just give us your phone number and website again if anyone want to reach you?
Sure. Our phone number is 914-723-MBHA or 6242, and our website is mbhany.com.
Thank you so much for being on our show. That was Jenny Kramer, eating disorder specialist. This is Dr. Roy Speiser. Thank you for being with us today on The Healthy Way. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening today to The Healthy Way. Thank you for joining us. I am Dr. Roy Speiser of Clean Water Revival with my co-host Kim Jones of Prescription and Wellness Shop. For more information, the toll-free number is 800-444-3563. Again, 800-444-3563. See you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. for more on how to improve your overall well-being. Be well.
It's a mama singing songs about the Lord. It's a daddy spending family time the world says he cannot afford. These simple moments change the world. It's a pastor at a tiny little church. 40 years of loving on the broken and the hurt. These simple moments change the world. Dream small. Don't buy the lie, you've gotta do it all. Just let Jesus use you where you are. One day at a time, live well. Loving God and others as yourself. One little ways where only you can help. With His great love, a tiny rock can make a giant fall. Dream small. It's visiting the widow down the street, or dancing on a Friday with your friend with special needs. These simple moments.